I was so lucky to have been able to sit down and speak with Philadelphia-based composer Jacob Cooper, whose music has been performed on stages such as Carnegie Hall, Lincoln Center, Disney Hall, and performed by ensembles such as the San Francisco Symphony, the Los Angeles Philharmonic, 8th Blackbird, and so many more. In our conversation, we talk about the release of his sophomore album, Terrain. So good to be speaking with you, Jacob. Thank you for taking the time out of your day. Congratulations on the release of your sophomore album, Terrain. I'm wondering, when did you start working on this project?
I started this project, I guess, back in 2016 when Ripple the Sky, the first piece, was written. Although I started thinking about that piece probably in 2014. So it's been a long time. You mentioned this is my sophomore album, and that album, Silver Threads, my first album, came out in 2014, so this is 6 years now. I tend to be a rather deliberate and slow composer, so it's the fruit of a lot of labor over the last half decade.
Congratulations. I'm sure that it feels really good to finally have it out into the world. And I'm really curious about your musical upbringing as well. How did you first get introduced to music?
Yeah, that's a good question for me, because I started composing relatively late. I mean, I played the trumpet from the time I was in fourth grade. I just signed up for an instrument and thought the trumpet was cool. And I played that through college. But it wasn't until I got to college that my musical world expanded. I went to a liberal arts college, Amherst College in Massachusetts, small school, and just had encouraging professors there and, you know, took music classes because there were no core requirements and I could take what I wanted. So I was like, oh, this would be kind of fun to take a music class. So I took music theory classes. And then as part of those music theory classes, you have to do model composition eventually. And then I was like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And so then my senior year, I took a composition class and ended up writing for my final project a violin sonata in D minor. Like, I was listening to a lot of Beethoven and Brahms and stuff. So this is the kind of thing that a lot of composers will do when they're, you know, 12 or 13 years old, get into that world. So it was really not until then that I started composing in earnest, really, really after college, I guess.
I read that now you mostly write for the studio rather than for live ensembles like the violin sonata that you just mentioned. Was there a time during your college education where you maybe thought that you would be composing for live ensembles only?
Yeah, I mean, it went way after that, actually. I mean, through graduate school, I was primarily just an acoustic composer. And it wasn't so much so I went to the Yale School of Music, and it wasn't so much that the faculty discounted studio music, but there was just no one really there who could show me how it could contribute to my composition. So when I finished my schoolwork, I just found myself getting more and more wrapped into the studio world. And part of that is because the majority of music I listen to is quote unquote popular music. I still have the utmost respect for the classical world and still do listen to it a fair amount. But I think that the kind of music I relate to the most is music that is produced in the studio. So that seemed to be a natural fit for my own music.
And another thing I'm curious about, was there like a switch when you realized that you really wanted to primarily work with electronics, or was it kind of like a gradual kind of progression into the world of studio music?
Definitely very gradual. And it's still happening to a certain extent. I mean, I guess I've written all these pieces are very studio based, but I have written acoustic music relatively recently and probably will continue to do so as well. I think that it certainly helps for live performance. I think that there's nothing better than seeing a live performer on stage showing how a piece is made right there and showing how a piece can be performed. So I still value that a lot and try to keep that part of my compositions.
And one of the reasons why I really love chatting with living composers is because I'm always so interested in, you know, hearing their process for naming their pieces. How did you come up with titles like Ripple in the Sky and Expiation and even the title of the album, Terrain?
Yeah. So I actually have to correct you on one thing. And so many people make this mistake. They call it Ripple in the Sky rather than Ripple the Sky. Because, and it's interesting that we're talking about titling, you are not the first person to do that. There are at least a dozen who have done that. So that idea, Ripple the Sky, was taken from, so that first piece is inspired by Robert Schumann's suicide attempt and his mental illness. And a lot of the text in it that the poet Greg Brounderville wrote is taken from Schumann's own writings and sort of messed around with, or at least inspired by Schumann's own writings. So for this title, Greg found a line where Schumann had written in his diary where he was something about a boat in the water, and it said, not a ripple, comma, the sky, and then blah, 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 went on to talk about that. So we like this idea of taking that comma out and just connecting those two phrases as if they were one. And then it also fit with ideas of otherworldliness and a sort of dichotomy between land and sky. Like, you don't see a ripple in the sky, but in a way the earth world is, can have an impact on the sky world and all of those things. Then for Expiation, I guess I could go through each one here. Expiation is, so that piece is part of a larger vocal theater piece I'm working on now. I work for 16 voice women's choir called Threnos, parentheses for the throat. And that work is about, it's essentially like a requiem for animals. I like to describe it like that, in the sense that a standard requiem like Mozart's Requiem or Verdi's Requiem or something allows you to think about death. Like, it's a space for the audience to think about death. Of course, it's like supposed to be about primarily about Christ's death, but it's also, you know, people often think about the death of other people. And so I like to sort of turn people's gaze towards this death that we don't normally think about, the death of animals, particularly animals that are killed for slaughter and consumption. So this piece, Expiation, is a particular moment in that choral work that is a solo piece, of course, where it's about a narrator sort of coming to grips with this killing of animals and rituals related to that. And I don't think that the word animal is actually noted at any point in the piece, but it is, that's sort of the underlying idea behind that. But outside the context of Threnos, it can, like in the context of the album, this album, it can be extrapolated to just larger ideas of retribution and violence and, yeah, coming to grips with things that have been done. So the last piece, Terrain, I liked the line that Zach Savage, the poet for that piece, had written, a terrain of stay and momently, which is what we close the work with. I liked it because it dealt, first of all, the word momently is kind of funny, and it makes you think for a moment. But I like this idea of stay, like extending the time infinitely versus momently being like an instantaneous thing. And so we actually considered calling the whole album Terrain of Stay and Momently, but that was, or at least calling the whole piece the Terrain of Stay and Momently, but that just seemed like too much like a mouthful. So we just stuck with the word terrain, which reflects the sort of natural element that's present in all the pieces as well.
So in this album, like you just mentioned, you collaborate with distinguished poets, Theo Bleckman and Jody Landau, as well as cellist Ashley Bathgate. How did you come to know these artists?
Oh, let's see. I guess for each, it's just sort of through the new music scene. For Theo, I'm part of a collective called the Sleeping Giant Composers Collective, and we had worked with Theo on a project for the Albany Symphony for their chamber orchestra group called the Dogs of Desire. So the six composers in the collective worked with Theo Bleckman as a soloist. And I had heard his work, particularly the work that he had done with David Lang, but also he comes from a jazz background. And so I'd heard the work he'd done with that. And I was just like, he's the one I want to work with now. He's amazing. And Jody is a younger singer, just in his late 20s now, who works out in LA with the ensemble Wild Up. And I worked with Chris Rowntree, the director of Wild Up. He was the rehearsal conductor for Ripple the Sky. And I guess I got to know Jody through that and just sort of that LA world. And he asked me to write a piece for him, and I was excited to do it because I love his voice as well. And then Ashley, I went to graduate school with, actually, and she had commissioned me to write a piece for her before too, a solo piece, and has just been a long time collaborator and friend. And, you know, someone that I know I can ask, does this work well for the cello? Can I hear you play this? Can you put in the time to record this for me so I can fool around with it in the studio?
You yourself said that you appreciate Bleckman because of his, quote, silk smooth voice and knack for vocal experimentation. And I'd love for you to expand on this idea of vocal experimentation. Am I right in assuming that Bleckman's own experimentation was part of the overall like compositional process for Ripple the Sky?
Totally, yeah. Yeah, and so Theo sings a lot with Meredith Monk, who I sort of see as the, you know, this icon of the vocal experimental world. And he just has an amazing way of, you know, he can have that beautiful line that he can sing in a straight tone and it's totally ethereal and gorgeous. But then he can also do all these really strange things with his mouth in a very interesting way. Especially for Ripple the Sky, this was interesting for us because the piece being inspired by Schumann's mental illness relates a lot to how at the end of his life, he had a lot of trouble speaking and would make all sorts of weird noises with his mouth reportedly. So at points I would say to Theo, I'd sort of hit record and say, okay, make some weird noises here. And then I'll figure out how to incorporate them. And increasingly that's the way that I like to work, really relying on performers to do things that I wouldn't be able to say, can you turn your tongue like this and then smack it against the side of your cheek and I'm going to make that sound, you know? So I was just like, you know, you can do this kind of weird stuff a lot. Let's hear what you can do.
And to quote you once again, you mentioned that this album is really about the instantaneous and the infinite. And to me, that seems so acutely timely while we're kind of still currently in a pandemic. In what ways do you hope your listeners will be able to cling to that sense of the instantaneous and the infinite when they're listening to Terrain?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'm glad you pointed that out. I mean, I think I generally strive for a listener to experience a sense of timelessness in my work. And I think that timelessness, I think of as often like the eternal present, like the one moment stretched out into an incredibly long moment or an infinite moment, really. And so I think that there's a certain sense of spirituality attached to that. A lot of my music in a way is kind of spiritual. It's sort of being placed in another world while you're listening to something, feeling something larger outside of yourself. And I think it's also often interesting to contrast that with these things that happen very briefly and momentarily. So that happens musically in my music with these long drones that seem to go on forever and then these like the little things that pop up. But my general hope is that you can mark time passing through these things that happen in an instant, but also sort of just feel like you're beyond time in a way. And yeah, you're totally right that it's in this quarantine world and totally strange world that time is passing in a very strange way. So I guess it's a form of escapism with that even too, where you can feel like you're stepping outside of this strange time into this other strange time or this non-existent time in a sense.
Yeah, that's really great. Thank you so much for sharing. And finally, before we go, what artists have you been listening to during quarantine?
Oh, wow. That's so great. It's interesting because I feel everything seems different right now. It's hard for me to connect to the music in the same way or get excited about music in the same way. And I'm not really sure why that is. You know, selfishly speaking or thinking about myself, it's like a funny time to release an album. It's good that it's an album and not a live performance because obviously that would have been canceled. But it's also funny because everyone's relationship with music is so different now. But I should say that I've long been into hip hop and I've just been watching on Netflix this documentary, or I guess it's sort of an expanded series, a serial work on, it's called Hip Hop Evolution. It's, it goes through from the first days with Africa, Bambaataa and all those guys in the Bronx up to the present. And I'm still sort of in the early stages of like the early 90s. And some of it I know and a lot of it I don't. And I'm learning a lot with that and listening to a lot of those artists. So that's been interesting for me. I think that it's been hard for me to find music that I find will directly connect to my own work. The hip hop doesn't really come through in my music at all, except maybe in like a production way. But I'm still certainly enjoying this music.
Great. Well, once again, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to sit down and have a chat with me.
Yeah, of course, Claire. Thank you so much for having me. It's always wonderful to be able to talk to people who are interested in new music. So thank you very much.
Once again, in conversation with Philadelphia-based composer Jacob Cooper, whose album, Terrain, is now available for your enjoyment.